Plenty of action on the bookshelves this week. While in Wicklow, Paddy Woodworth was running his finger along the Naturalist bookshelf, as we heard earlier in the week. Across the island in County Clare, Tig O'Sullivan has been examining some old, familiar, sometimes unloved volumes. This is The Cloud of Unknowing.
I'm not quite sure where they came from. They always seem to have been there. 21 books. Their thick white spines each had 3 small squares, one with a number, one with one or more letters, one with a stylized tree, all in gold against a deep blue. Also in gold, written at a right angle to the horizontal, such that you had to tilt your head to read it properly, the new book of knowledge. The books were kept on the bottom shelf of a bookcase. The fit was so strangely perfect that it gave to my impressionable young mind an august air of completeness. There was no room for any more. This was all the knowledge. I was not a great reader of fiction as a child, but for me these encyclopedia, with their thousands of pages, contained entire worlds. Maps and articles about distant lands were the first to draw me in. The European countries familiar from school maps, the American states, all with their own entries, their strange straight-line borders and exotic state birds. The Soviet republics, their diversity and humanity entirely at odds with the version of Russia that came through the television in this weird Cold War era.
Here's the pitch by Downing, swinging, there's a drive into left.
There were languages, lost civilizations, strange sports, assassinations, scientific discoveries, writers, art, technology, entire industries I'd never heard of, articles about bullfighting, electricity, the Virgin Mary, polio, metallurgy, funeral customs, the moon, bird migration, Marie Curie, Iceland, folk tales, Connecticut, ventriloquism, Lenin, Vladimir Ilyich, and John.
And our strength. We can have a strong and prosperous America at peace with itself and the world.
It was all terribly serious, in a way that deeply impressed me. Younger listeners might be intrigued to know how disconnected it all was from the commercial realm. There were no ads, no sponsored articles. The first few pages about, say, cycling were not made up of ads for bicycles or Lycra shorts. 10 minutes browsing an article about boats did not lead to people following you down the street or appearing at your bedroom window for the next few days, showing you canoe catalogues. Knowledge was stable and mostly written by scholars in the appropriate field. It was not likely that returning to an article after a few days, one would find that it had been changed by an anonymous editor with a zealous, jealous interest in the subject. In time, this stability tipped into obsolescence. At the end of 40 sketches of old white men, the President of the United States stubbornly remained Ronald Reagan. The World Cup champions were forever Italy, triumphant in the final over West Germany. West Germany would always be, well, West Germany. Absences and lacks, too, captured the book's specific moment and particular worldview. There were no articles on the American Empire or on cultural imperialism, such as might shed light on why a boy in rural Ireland was reading an American book to learn about Algeria. Music and movies, which were rapidly becoming my main interests and windows onto the wider world, were dealt with in a way that, to quote Morrissey, in time, the books rarely moved from their shelf, a barely noticed fixture in a house where little ever changed. They became less books and more like objects, heavy things that might be placed on one's lap to do a crossword, or for a grandchild to lean on when drawing. A newspaper clipping or a note might be slipped between the pages for safekeeping. Flowers from sweethearts, from funerals, were pressed to be kept and forgotten, lost somewhere between the Aztecs and the Industrial Revolution. The spines cracked and the books seemed to sag and grow somewhat, perhaps with these additions, perhaps from age. They had spent some 30 years in the same room, had watched children grow up and leave, come back and visit with other children who had an entirely new relationship with learning and books. They had been swept daily by the summer sun moving through the room and huddled together in the winter drafts. They had overheard thousands of conversations, listened to countless hours of films and television, been privy to minor and major family dramas. They didn't seem to fit their bookcases neatly anymore. S would spend a year on another shelf. JK would go missing for a while. When the time came to clear out the house, it took me a few hours to pack them into boxes. I was drawn down a series of rabbit holes. Articles that were simply interesting. Others that evoked a strange and magnetic nostalgia. The colours, the textures of the pages themselves drew me back to a time when my own world was remarkably small, while the larger world beyond it seemed both finite and, in theory at least, understandable. In Walter Benjamin's essay, Art in the Age of Mechanical Reproduction, he explores his idea of the aura, an ineffable air that attaches to original works of art and distinguishes them from printed copies. This aura, for Benjamin, derived from an original work's authenticity, its uniqueness and history, its role in ritual. I sometimes think that in time, with enough of a connection to human life and its small domestic rituals, such an aura can form around the most ordinary things, such as a set of mechanically reproduced books sold by travelling salesmen to families who may or may not have been able to afford to invest in knowledge as a luxury good. I sometimes think that this aura is itself a form of knowledge, a private and deeply human knowledge, and one that cannot be reproduced.
Tygo Sullivan there with The Cloud of Unknowing. And for all the clouds previous and yet to come, subscribe to the Culturefile podcast feed using your service of choice.